good morning. This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Monday, March 22nd. I'm Roz Brown. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio.
Since the start of the outbreak in the U.S., there's been a surge of incidents of bias, harassment, and violence against Asian Americans, immigrants, and Jewish communities.
There's a whole industry out here that's vital to a lot of people's lives, and it's delicious. Like, you can't say no to that.
The ratification of the 19th Amendment did not guarantee suffrage equality for all.
Those are some of the voices you'll hear on today's magazine. Stories coming up. Hundreds of people gathered in Denver and thousands more across the country over the weekend to show solidarity for the Asian American and Pacific Islander community following the recent deadly spa shootings in Atlanta. Then, Coloradans were encouraged to experience a plant-based diet Saturday in honor of Meat Out Day. But the proclamation to that effect by Governor Jared Polis rankled the state's ranchers and others who staged their own meat-in gatherings. KGNU was there. At the turn of the last century, there were lots of groups involved in the fight for a woman's right to vote. But only one group survived. The National League of Women Voters celebrated its 100th birthday in 2020, and the Boulder County League, celebrated 90 years yesterday. And we'll have more coming up. Finally, we'll get a preview of this afternoon's Metro show airing at 3 p.m. Following a commentary from Jim Hightower just after the BBC headlines at the bottom of the hour, it's a public affair and the Community Foundation of Boulder, hosted by Jim Williams. On this month's episode, the co-founder of Growing Up Boulder is interviewed, an organization working to make Boulder a more child-friendly city and county. We'll hear from a local sixth grader who's been at the center of the movement since she was in preschool. As always, on Monday morning, it's Counterspin at 9 a.m., a look at fairness and accuracy in reporting, followed by a morning of music from 9:30 to noon. But first today, we'll take a look at headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
This week, Colorado officials will loosen the coronavirus dial system again, making it easier for counties to relax restrictions on businesses, offices, and restaurants, and by allowing bars to reopen across the majority of the state. The changes were announced Friday night by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, which is seeking comments on the alterations through midday today. The new system goes into effect on Wednesday. The Colorado Sun reports that the new Dial 3.0 comes as an increasing number of Coloradans are receiving doses of a coronavirus vaccine. Friday marked the first day of vaccination eligibility in Phase 1B4, including those 50 and older and those who work in restaurants and education. Nearly 80% of people 70 and older have been fully vaccinated. That age bracket has made up almost 40% of the state's coronavirus hospitalizations. The state is planning to reopen vaccinations up to the general public in mid-April. The state's mask order could be eased starting on April 4th for counties in level green and blue, the least restrictive categories. However, students between the ages of 11 and 18 will still be required to continue to mask through the rest of this school year. A mass COVID-19 vaccination site is set to open today at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Commerce City. Centura Health will operate the site and said that it plans to administer hundreds of doses 4 days a week by appointment and is allowed by supply of the vaccine. Boulder County on Sunday reported 21 new coronavirus cases, but no new deaths. CU Boulder reported 16 positive tests found during testing on Friday. There were 22 people in Boulder County hospitals due to COVID-19 at the end of last week. Crowds gathered across the country to protest anti-Asian violence after 8 people were killed in Atlanta Thursday, 6 of whom were Asian American women, and there were rallies in Denver over the weekend. More than 200 people gathered Saturday in Denver near the Pacific Ocean Marketplace on West Alameda Avenue. The Denver Post reports that participants said hate and racism have been on the rise against Asian Americans, partly fueled by political rhetoric and labeling of COVID-19 as the Chinese virus. Speakers stood in front of the Vietnam War Memorial and the American South Vietnamese flags fluttered in the breeze. More than a half a dozen speakers shared painful stories of friends, colleagues, and family members being verbally abused and spit on and attacked. On Saturday night, a large crowd gathered outside Coors Field to remember the victims of the Atlanta shooting spree. The candlelight vigil was held across the street from a plaque memorializing the Chinatown riot of 1880 in an area known back then as Hop Alley. There was a moment of silence as the Atlanta victims' names were read aloud. We'll have more on this story after headlines. Colorado Governor Jared Polis signed several bills into law yesterday. At Cherry Creek State Park, the governor approved a measure that benefits state parks. The legislation will invest $20 million into improvements at 12 state parks and expand outdoor recreation opportunities. Nine News reports that the state parks have been explosive growth in visitor numbers as people look for outdoor and socially distanced activities during the pandemic. Later, Polis signed two bills aimed at wildfire response, including the purchase of a new helicopter. Then, at a dispensary, the governor signed a bill to help increase equity and diversity in the state's booming marijuana business. The measure will support industry entrepreneurs, primarily to make the pot business more reflective of the state's demographics. Leaders of both the Democratic and Republican parties in the state are urging Colorado's new Congressional Redistricting Commissions to push ahead despite not having the data needed. Census Bureau population figures won't be released until at least September 30th. However, as the Colorado Sun reports, the commissions are supposed to adopt final maps in September. Democratic State Majority Leader Steve Fenberg of Boulder said he believes the deadlines can be pushed back by the commissions themselves. Delays in the redistricting process could toss Colorado politics into turmoil as candidates decide which contest to run in. The state is expected to pick up an eighth congressional seat this year because of its growing population, and already a number of big-name Democrats and Republicans are lining up to seek the position. Last week, the Associated Press reported that states under pressure to redraw congressional and legislative districts may be able to get the numbers in an outdated format in August, more than a month earlier than the planned official release date. The urban versus rural battle in the state is heating up. Colorado is in the early planning stages of carrying out the voter-mandated reintroduction of the gray wolf, but it's already facing resistance from one rural county in the northwest corner of the state, and more are expected to join. The Denver Post reports that Rio Blanco County's commissioners have approved a resolution declaring a wolf reintroduction sanctuary county, essentially daring Colorado Parks and Wildlife to bring the wolf back under the state law passed narrowly by voters in November. Rio Blanco officials are encouraging neighboring counties to follow their lead in allowing natural wolf migration, but objecting to artificially reintroduced wolves. Commissioner Gary Moyer said that it feels like a war is being waged on rural Colorado, but said they are also stronger together, and it will be hard to ignore them if they work together. The National Weather Service says we'll see cloudy skies today, and snow is likely before 11 a.m. with a high of 39. Tomorrow, snow showers likely in the afternoon with a high around 42. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. It's 8:11. Well, as you heard in headlines, hundreds of rallies were held across the U.S. over the weekend calling for an end to anti-Asian violence after six women of Asian descent were killed in shootings at three Atlanta area spas last week. Colorado groups joined the call to action.
For over a year now, there has been an explosion of anti-Asian hate incidences, including hate crimes from coast to coast. And these incidences have been stoked by American leaders calling the COVID-19 pandemic names such as the China virus and Kung Flu.
That's Sarah Moore, executive director of the Denver group Dragon 5280. She spoke last Friday at a press conference condemning the Asian violence in Atlanta.
Today, I stand with my fellow leaders and Asian American and Pacific Islander supporters asking for our communities and our nation to come together to stop AAPI and Asian hate. The Denver area is home to almost 50 different Asian ethnic communities who are feeling exposed and fearful. Let us come together as a whole and support our AAPI communities, and let us condemn and stop this hate.
Denver Mayor Michael Hancock acknowledged the rise in hate crimes from coast to coast and said the rise in violence must be stopped.
And I want to make it very clear to everyone that bias-motivated crimes of any kind is not and will never be tolerated in Denver, Colorado. And that I'm always baffled how someone's race, ethnicity, religion, ancestry, national origin, sexual orientation, or physical or mental disability could be used for violence toward them or their property. It's ignorant. It's unacceptable. It's misguided. It is mindless. And we need to call an end to it today. Whoever we see doing it, we need to encourage the reporting of these crimes. To call 911. You can also call our bias-motivated crimes unit by calling 720 913-6458 or email the information to bias crimes information to denvergov.org. Hate has no place here. Now or ever, we must be good to one another and we must take care of each other. And so I'm proud to stand arm in arm with everyone on this call and everyone in the community who simply says, not here, not ever, in our city will we tolerate such actions.
Speakers describe the Atlanta incident as a gut punch to those who have experienced hate crimes and violence. This is Jeremy Shaver, Senior Associate Director of the Mountain States Anti-Defamation League.
Chinese Americans, Filipino Americans, Korean Americans, Japanese Americans, Vietnamese Americans, and Asian Americans of all backgrounds are Americans, period. Through their blood, sweat, tears, and fortitude, they have made this state and this country a better place. We are indebted to all of them and to all of you. Showing our solidarity today in the face of anti-Asian violence is both the moral thing to do and the most effective way to ensure safety and respect for Coloradans who find their roots in Asia and the Pacific. The horrific shootings in Georgia remind us that racism and misogyny are a dangerous and deadly mix. They also remind us that words have consequences, as so many of them have said before. Since the start of the pandemic, ADL has been deeply concerned about the spread of anti-Asian and anti-Jewish conspiracy theories, which was spurred in large part by public officials, including the president at the time, blaming the spread of the virus on China and Chinese people. Global anxiety about the outbreak of the coronavirus has spawned misinformation and scapegoating. Since the start of the outbreak in the U.S., there's been a surge of incidents of bias, harassment, and violence against Asian Americans, immigrants, and Jewish communities. The rhetoric blaming Asians for this pandemic has stood for far too long, and now we see the consequences. This must end now.
Fran Campbell with Denver's Asian Chamber of Commerce said Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have experienced a long history of racism and xenophobia in the U.S., and it's affected Denver's economy.
When the whispers of COVID-19 and where it was coming from started back in December 2019, our businesses here, our small businesses, restaurants, markets, service businesses started feeling the crunch. People stopped coming. No customers were coming in. So much so that by the time we all went into quarantine, there was a 30 to 40% drop in revenue. So if you compound that with COVID, with the economy, with the racial equity questions that we were going through during the summer, those businesses are definitely at a handicap. They're starting way back. So as our city begins to recover, those are the issues that we're wrestling with, is that they already are so far behind and hanging on by the skin of their teeth.
Again, that was Fran Campbell, president of Denver's Asian Chamber of Commerce. Last week, President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris met with community leaders in Atlanta following the shooting. A 21-year-old white man has been charged with the killings.
Support comes from Centennial Peaks Hospital, offering help for listeners or their loved ones who may be experiencing a mental health crisis. Inpatient and outpatient services available from a medical staff of independent practitioners. ECT available for treatment-resistant conditions. Details at CentennialPeaks.com.
It's 8:17. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Well, did you eat meat on Saturday? Or abide by the governor's March 20th proclamation of pro-plants? It turns out bacon and freedom were on the menu at a meat inn held Saturday in Decono, and Sam Fuqua was there.
We're serving pancakes and bacon and also...
Weld County Commissioner Lori Sane handed me two strips of locally smoked bacon wrapped in a pancake at the meet-in breakfast event outside a donut shop along Highway 52 in Decono. It was the first of dozens of pro-meat events in Weld County on Saturday, the same day that Democratic Governor Jared Polis proclaimed Meat Out Day in Colorado. Republican Sane says the negative tone of the proclamation is what upset her and some of the farmers and ranchers she represents.
A lot of our farmers and ranchers felt a little slighted when a proclamation came out. It wasn't necessarily that it was celebrating vegetables, because we grow a lot of those too, obviously. In fact, we grow a lot of those things like millet and quinoa and other products that make meatless versions for vegans. It's the fact that he called it cruel, unhealthy, unsafe for the environment.
The resolution does say that a growing number of people are reducing their meat consumption to help prevent animal cruelty. And it's true that meat eating is down in the United States. Beef consumption peaked back in the 1970s, and a 2019 Gallup poll found that about one quarter of people surveyed said they cut back on meat over the past year. Animal welfare and environmental impact were two factors cited in the survey, but by far the biggest reason people surveyed gave for eating less meat was their health. The health benefits of eating less meat is also the top line in the proclamation signed by Governor Polis and in guidance from the American Heart Association, which recommends eating less red meat to reduce the risk of heart disease. Scott James, another Weld County commissioner at the Decono Meat Inn, says he's okay with a message of moderation.
I am fine with people handling things in moderation, but when at times when someone is told to completely strike something in a proclamation, I have an issue with that. I celebrate freedom, but I don't celebrate mandates.
There was no mandate in Polis's proclamation. It's one of hundreds coming out of the governor's office every year. The Colorado State Legislature does the same thing, passing dozens of non-binding resolutions every session on a wide range of topics. But to friends Robin and Crystal from Frederick, declaring a meat out day in Colorado seemed like an attack on the beef industry and on freedom. They declined to give their last names and came to the breakfast meet-in wearing matching T-shirts.
What do they say again?
Support Colorado ranchers.
We're having a barbecue tonight, and we're going to have all beef, and it's going to be awesome. I have low iron, and my doctor tells me I need to eat more red meat. I just don't want our freedoms taken away. It's all about freedoms.
Total sales of agricultural products from Weld County add up to about $2 billion a year. And that puts Weld among the top 10 ag counties in the nation. And most of that money comes from livestock and poultry. The importance of the industry is one reason Katie and Carter Cessna gave for coming to the event. The young couple, with 9-month-old son Cohen on mom's hip, say they also saw it as a way to meet people with similar values.
It's really hard to find people that have the same values as you, and so it's neat to have events like this where you can meet people and instantly connect with them because you're like, oh, we have the same values.
Well, there's a whole industry out here that's vital to a lot of people's lives, and it's delicious. So, like, you can't say no to that. So it's like,
everybody needs it.
Yeah, I think it's important to kind of raise awareness of that.
In Decono, I'm Sam Fuqua for KGNU.
Support comes from Colorado Tech Point, a technology store specializing in sales and repair service of verified pre-owned laptops, computers, and mobile devices. Located at 436 Main Street in downtown Longmont. More information at co-techpoint.com or by calling 303-848-3738.
It's 8:22 here at KGNU. You're listening to the Morning Magazine. Yesterday, the Boulder County chapter, celebrating its 90th anniversary, heard a presentation from the first African-American president of the League of Women Voters. Carolyn Jefferson Jenkins is also the author of The Untold Story of Women of Color in the League of Women Voters.
A lot has changed since I last spoke in Colorado, especially in 2020, with the election of the first woman and woman of color to the position of Vice President of the United States. We have a lot to celebrate. The history that many portray of the suffrage movement and its legacy organization, the League of Women Voters, is a romanticized, sanitized version of accomplishments and achievements, the things that we are most proud of, mentioning challenges only as they have impacted our work to show how we overcame them. I want to do three things. I want to acquaint you with the women of color who labored in the suffrage movement who you may not know, motivate you to continue the work that needs to be done to carry on their legacy, and challenge you to dream a better future, making democracy work for all of us by acknowledging the past and reimagining the future. In preparing my remarks, I asked myself why this topic would be of interest. And I came to the conclusion that we need to be reminded of the power that we gain when we truly understand our history as a prelude to our future. I emphasize our because the most important part of history, or her story, is the factual story, the story of everyone involved, even if it does not present us at our best. There are universal themes and struggles everywhere that transcend race. And the story I'm about to tell spotlights those themes of resistance and resilience and renewal. It's a story of courageous women who would not accept no for an answer. The story of brave women who would not be relegated to second-class citizenship in the suffrage movement or the nation. I have to admit that, unfortunately, this story is not the history that I learned in school, because women were often not represented in textbooks, and women of color were totally invisible. As a result, telling this story is personal to me. I got to know these women that I studied, not just what they did, but what they thought, how they felt, the challenges they faced, and the triumphs that they constructed. Throughout this journey, not only did I learn about them, but I learned about myself and about the League of Women Voters and what I needed to do to make sure that their story, my story, was not lost to history. I learned that we need to insist that our story is told and how that story is told when there are competing narratives. The more I tell the story of the thousands of women of color whose names do not appear in the history books, the more that people hear the story, the more we should be compelled to change the narrative, to acknowledge, honor, write, W-R-I-T-E, and write, R-I-G-H-T, history. To turn back the clock 100 years and give credit to the women of color who made significant contributions to the suffrage movement and its legacy organization. What is important to note is that any commemoration must accept that the ratification of the 19th Amendment did not guarantee suffrage equality for all, but expose the underlying issues of race. Why add this to the conversation now? Because it's time. Carrie Chapman Catt said, and I quote, "If we learn from the experience, there is no failure, only delayed victory." Carrie Chapman Catt was a walking contradiction, especially on issues of race, often sacrificing women of color for the, quote, good of the cause. Yet we cannot overlook her contributions and how they now serve as a foundation for us to correct the missteps of the past. We want our heroes to be perfect, and that is only human nature. But history reminds us that they are just people. History is messy, it's uncomfortable, and sometimes unbelievable, particularly on issues of race. But from acknowledging these unpleasant truths can come a brighter future. The history that has been omitted gives context to this current moment of reckoning in this nation. The conversations on race are always uncomfortable, but being uncomfortable forces movement. Being okay with hard conversations moves us forward. We are engaged in more than just an intellectual exercise. This is about real people and real thoughts. To be a suffragist as a woman of color meant a series of compromises and collaboration and controversy. On February 14, 1920, the National American Woman Suffrage Association became the League of Women Voters. And as founder Carrie Chapman Catt stated, the organization was established to, quote, finish the fight. Her intent in finishing the fight was to prepare women for the right that they had fought so hard for and the responsibility that came with it. On August 18, 1920, when the 19th Amendment was ratified, the fight was not finished because women of color, including Native American women, were still being subjected to racist barriers under what were known as Jim Crow laws, which prohibited the full implementation of the new amendment, particularly in the South. Catt also did not acknowledge that the discriminatory philosophy that was such an important part of the suffrage movement transferred into the legacy organization, nor did she make any effort to change it. In the New York Times special edition on August 16, 2020, entitled How American Women Won the Right to Vote, it reminded us that suffragists were Black and white, Asian and Latinx, immigrant and indigenous, queer and straight, and everything else. Suffragists came from big cities and small towns, the coast and the heartland, and every walk of life. The movement drew diverse communities into its struggle for a more equal democracy. This was a fight that they all chose to undertake. This fight, fueled by hopes and dreams, was often stalled by realities. It was the passion of these brave women of color that kept them in the fight. We must acknowledge that the history of the suffrage movement and the League is a paradox. It's a story of themes of strategic choices and recurrent themes. It's a story of constant tension between principle and practicality. Adding the story of these women does not take away from anyone else's story.
Again, that was an excerpt from a talk to the Boulder County chapter of the League of Women Voters yesterday by Carolyn Jefferson Jenkins, the first African-American woman president of that group. You can learn more about the local group or the National League, actually, at lwvbc.org. That's lwvbc.org.
Tune in every Monday morning at 9 a.m. to Counterspin. Counterspin provides a critical examination of the news each week. Counterspin exposes biased news, censored stories, the power of corporate influence, and more. The news behind the headlines, from FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. That's every Monday morning at 9 a.m.